Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf, Sukkah Lamed Dalet. We'll begin at the Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. Says the Mishnah 8 lines from the bottom. Arava Gzula Uyevesha Psula. If you have a stolen or dried up Arava, it's possible for the same reason as by Lulav. It's not yours. Need Lachem. Dried up is lacking in beauty, lacking in hadar. So it's possible. Shalash Shera. Here as well, if it was taken from Avodah Zarah, it's possible because it's lacking shiur and chashibus. It's meant for destruction, in which case it's not considered something of quantity. And the arava needs to be 3 tefachim long. Something meant for destruction doesn't have size. Size adds capacity. It adds functionality. It's meant for destruction, doesn't have that. And therefore, it is possible. Niktam roisha, it lost its tip. Nifritz oleh, or lost its leaves. Vatzav tzafa. This is a different type of arava. It's closely related to the true arava, as described in the Torah. So it's of the family, but it's a different variety. This tzav tzafa is not considered a proper arava and is possible. Kimusha, if the arava is wilted. Vishenashru miktas aleh, or lost only a minor a portion of its leaves, vishel baal, or if it actually grows in a field rather than at the stream, kshir, in all these cases, the arava is kosher. Says Rashi, 8 lines from the bottom. Arava gzula vivesha psula, lilulav, lilachem akulu ukai. The pasuk, ulakachtem lochem, is referring to all the four minim, whether lulav, esrog, hadasa, hadas, or arava. Since it's slated for destruction and burning, it's as though it doesn't have a shiur. Tzaf tzafa, says Rashi, is a min arava. It's from the arava family. And it has a roundish, circular shaped leaf. The Gemara will learn from a pasuk that it's unsuitable for lulav use. Oh, so although it's not something which grows along the stream, it grows in an ordinary field, it's still kosher. Which the Gemara will teach us. What is a baal? That's a field which gets its water supply naturally, just by rainfall. Baal karkash en etzricha lahashkes. You don't have to actually manually water it. The sagali b'matar shamayim. It suffices through rainfall. K'tamrin mashkem es ha-shalachin. Baal means lishna de mesesvusa, something which is settled. Kmo yikiv yival bachar psula, targuminan arei kemad de mesyasev elemen psulta. So it needs to be settled. This field is self-sufficient. Now as Rashi Akasha, v'hai de polig luhu b'masnisen, b'dal bavi. Why is it that the Mishnah splits the different types apart? We have a Mishnah for lulav, another Mishnah for esrig, and so on. Says Rashi, the reason why the Mishnah is Tani Lulav Apinavshi, Lulav separately, Vahadas Apinavshi, and Hadas separately, Vechen Arava, Vechen Esrig, Vilayira Vitanalu, rather than just bunching them together. Mishum de Yeshu Bekol Echad Mashen Mechaber. Each type had its own unique dinim, and therefore the Mishnah chose to separate them, although they have a lot in common. But due to the fact that there are separate halachis relating to each one individually, the Mishnah chose to separate them. The Ilu Tzini Har Basel, for instance, that concept, Tzini Har Basel, where the lulav has short leaves, that's a lulav-related halacha, and unique to lulav. Vanava Merubin Malav, more berries than leaves, that's exclusive to hadas. Vetzav Tzafa, as we just learned, that's an arava-related halacha. V'arlo etruma l'shayich ala be'esrik. Hilkach says Rashi etzrichu arba bavi. That's why we have four separate mishnayos representing the four types of minim. Says the Gemara. Tanu rabbanan, we learned in a brisa. What does the pasuk say? Arve nachal. Stream aravis. Hagdelim ala nachal, which grow along the brook, along the stream, along the water. Davar achar, another pshat. Arve nachal. She'ola shalom moshucht k'nachal. It features a long and drawn-out leaf, just like a flowing stream of water. Tanyidach, we have another brisa. Arvi nachal. If so, I would say, ein li el arvi nachal. You can only use aravas which actually grow by the waterside. Shel ba'al v'shel har minayim. What about those which grow on ordinary fields? V'shel har, between the mountains. Talmud loyma arvi nachal mekol makom. Arvi is a lashon rabim to include all the other locations as well. It says Rashi, two lines from the bottom. Arvi nachal, hagdelos al hanachal. Nachal mayim. Mitzvah bezu, says Rashi. Of course it's a lichat chila to bring arvi nachal. Umiyu b'shal ba'al k'shirak til kamon k'chsev arvi lashon rabim. So according to Rashi, and Tosis points this out as well, that arvi nachal is certainly something meant to be brought. In fact, there are many that have mehadar to use arvi nachal. But b'di'eved, even an arava grown at a different location is kosher. We learn from arvi nachal that the leaf has to be moshuch, v'loy ogol, rather than circular and roundish. Prat l'tzaf, and that rules out the tzaf variety. V'shel harim, arava shel harim, v'loy tzaf. It grows on the mountains, but it's not the tzaf tzafa. How do we know it's suitable? Arvi mekol makim, lashon rabim. So lashon rabim will include this as well. Now, the point of the brises is that there is a certain variety, a certain species called arvi nachal, which is generally, it's primarily found alongside the water. Now, even if you should have it growing on the mountain or on the baal field, that's okay because it's still considered that type. Whereas the tzaftzafa variety, on the other hand, generally grows not alongside the water, grows out in the mountains. So even if you happen to find one along the water, it's still a tzaf-safa. So it's based on type, on species, on variety. You have to determine which one is what. The Gemara later will actually give us telltale signs, ways to identify the arava versus the tzaf-safa. Continues the one on top. Abba Shol Eimer. Arve is Lashon Rabin, right? Arve is Shtayim, representing two different types of arava usages. Achas Lululuv, Achas L'Migdash. One with the Lulav and one which was held in the Beis HaMikdash, and they would hold it and walk around the Mizbeach with it. So according to Abishol, the Lashon Rabim, Arve, is referring to two applications of Arava. Says the Gemara, Rabbanan L'Migdash M'nalu. Now the Rabbanan who already learned something from Arve, as we just mentioned, Mikol Makom, to include all locations, all types, how would they know? That is, they didn't have Arava in the Mikdash. Hilchos HaGemirlu. Yeah, that was learned from Malach HaMashim Sinai. Hilchos HaGemirlu. The Omer of Asya Omer of Yechanan. The following three items were taught through Halacha. Eser Natiyos. 10 saplings. This is a Shviz-related Halacha. Arava. The Arava used in the Beis HaMikdash. V'nusach HaMayim. That you meant to pour water on the Mizbeach throughout Sukkos. These three are Halacha LaMashim Sinai. Tan Rabban. Arve Nachal. Hagdeles Al HaNachal. It's a type of arava which generally grows alongside the brook. Prat l'tzaftzafa, hagdei l'bein harim, as opposed to the tzaftzafa variety, which is generally found between the mountains. Omer abzera mikra. How do you know this? Meaning, we really have a kasha here. Arve includes all types, all locations. So how would you know to exclude the tzaftzafa? Maybe that's also included in arve, lashon rabim, which is an inclusive term. Mikra, I'll prove from a pasuk that tzaftzafa is an inferior type and is a downgrade, is a step down from your typical arava, and it's not what the Torah meant. The pasuk in Yecheskel, which was demolishing Klal Yisrael, giving teichacha, reads as follows: Kachal mayim rabim tzaftzafa samay. A tree, a plant, which is kachal mayim rabim, which grows along the waters, which is fed by the abundance of waters, which develops and prospers because of that. Tzaftzafa samay. They placed it as a tzaftzafa. They downgraded it. And so the Gemara explained exactly what the pasuk had in mind. In any case, this teaches us that tzaftzafa is a lower grade plant than arava. And we assume, if so, that it's not what the Torah had in mind. Let's go down to Rashi. So you'll notice the middle wide lines. On the third one, Mikra, says Rashi. the tzavtzafa the great usa. How would you know that tzavtzafa is considered inferior to arava, and therefore we assume that's not what the Torah meant? V'loy mina d'arava, it's not the same species and variety as your typical arava. The nerbayim arim kalmakim, in which case we would perhaps include it from the word arave, which is all inclusive. How would we know that it's not? Kach al mayim rabim tzavtzafa shemayim. Ravo soon will explain to us that the point of the Teichacha was that you're taking something of value and you're lowering your standards, you're downgrading. That item, that tree, that plant, which was rooted and drew its sustenance from Mayim Rabim, which allowed it to develop and prosper, now Tzavtzafa turned into something inferior. Tzavtzafa. Almagri Usahu, apparently this is something inferior. The Teichacha Namar B'Yecheskel, it was used to provide Teichacha, to reprimand Klal Yisrael for having low self-esteem, for downgrading themselves, for keeping low standards. Says the Gemara, Amar Li Abaye, how would you know that's the pshat in the Pasuk? V'dilma Perushi K'mefarish. Perhaps the Pasuk is simply explaining itself. Kach Al Mayim Rab. This plant, which is Almayim Rabim, which is a high-grade plant, Umayinu, Tzavtzafa. It's actually a Tzavtzafa. So it's the same thing. There's no downgrade. Right? We're not going from one to the other. It's one plant that the Pasuk is describing. The one that draws the sustenance from the Mayim Rabim and grows and prospers. It's a high-grade plant. Imkain says, well, if that would be the case, my Samay. Why would the Pasuk say Tzavtzafa? Samay, which indicates they've changed, they've switched tracks, they've taken something valuable and some turned it into tzavtzafa, they've downgraded and lowered their standards. Amar Rav Avoh, now Rav Avoh will actually explain to us, describe to us the exact meaning of the pasuk. Amar Rav Avoh, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, in fact, this is what Hashem was saying. Ani Amarti, I figured, Sheyu Yisroel Lefonai Kekachal Mayim Rabim. Yisroel will present themselves before me, will conduct themselves on higher standards. Like this tree which draws its sustenance from Mayim Rabim, which allows it to grow, to develop, to prosper. Umayinu Arava. Right? As we find in the Arava tree. What then did they do? They took themselves and they downgraded themselves. They adopted low standards, like an inferior plant. Vein Samu Atzman, Ketzavtzafa Shebaharim. They adopted the lifestyle of a Tzavtzafa. They went down from what they were supposed to be. So that's a disappointment expressed by Hashem. And this is the raya that Tzavtzafa is a low-grade plant versus the Arava. There was another version of this dialogue. Same results, just slightly different version as far as the dialogue and who said what. So according to this version, the pasuk of Kachal Mayim was already included in the initial brisa, right? We had a brisa which said, Arve Nachal, the species which generally grows Bein Alhan Nachal, as opposed to Tzavtzafa, which is unsuitable, that's the one that grows Bein Aharim. And the brisa already included a raya, that pasuk. I'll prove that Tzavtzafa is inferior. Kach al mayim rabim Tzavtzafa shemayim, right? Tzavtzafa shemayim. So you've taken something valuable and replaced it with Tzavtzafa. That's the brisa. On that, Rav Zeira asked, instead of Abaye, now it's Rav Zeira. Maskev l'Rav Zeira, how do you know that's the pshat in the pasuk? That Tzavtzafa is a downgrade. V'dilma perushikum afarish. The pasuk is merely explaining itself. It begins, Kach al mayim rabim. Mind you, what is that valuable plant? Tzavtzafa. How do you know it's inferior? Imkain my summit. Why would the pasuk say Tzavtzafa summit, which indicates you've replaced, you've downgraded, you've lowered your standards from Arava to Tzavtzafa. Now we have a Ravo who actually explains the deeper meaning. Amar Ravo, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem expressed his disappointment as follows. Ani Amarti, I figured initially Sheyu Yisroel Lefonai Kekach Al Mayim Rabim. Yisroel will develop and prosper. Will adopt high standards like an Arava which grows alongside the streams. Umayinu Arava. And what happened? Vehem Samu Atzmo Ketzavtzafa Shebaharim. They consider themselves inferior, like the Tzavtzafa amongst the mountains. Now we're going to have the indicators. Tana Rabban. Ezu Arava. How do you know what's an Arava? Ve'ezu Tzavtzafa, as opposed to Tzavtzafa. We have three signs. Number one, arava kanashal adam. Generally, the actual stick, the stalk of the arava is reddish. V'ala shalom mashach, and it has a long, drawn-out leaf. Upia chalak, with its smooth edges. As opposed to tzavtzafa, kanashal lovan, it has a whitish stalk. V'ala shalom ogel, with a roundish leaf. Upia doima lamagel, with serrated edges, similar to a sickle. So it's 3 verses 3. But hani, we have a brisa doima lamagel kasha. If it has ridges like a sickle, that's fine. Doima lamaser pasul. If it's really strong indentations like a saw, then that's worse, that's pasul. But if it's just slightly ridged, that's okay. How does this work with the brisa? Which seems to say that ridged edges represents the tzavtzafa. Omar Abaye Kitanya Ahi. You know what that brisa, which allows doima lamagel, you know what that's speaking to? Bechilfa Gil is discussing a certain type of an off-brand arava. Chilfa Gila, which is part of the Arvei Nachal family. In fact, it only has some slight ridges. It's only slightly serrated like a magel, in which case it's still included in the arava in the Arvei Nachal family, as opposed to Tzavtzafa, which has more severe and more pronounced ridges along its sides. Amar Abaye Shmami No. We can conclude from this, Hai Chilfa Gila Kasha Leishana, that this Chilfa Gila type of Arava is Kasha for Lulav. Pshita, of course, says Gemara, why would I think otherwise? Ma'o the time, perhaps I would think, Hai Li'is Leishem Levai Lenis Kasha. Since this type has a nickname, has a title, Chilfa Gila, it's not just plain Arava, so perhaps that's not what the Torah had in mind. Kamash Malon, we learn from this Brisa that it's also okay. Ve'ema Chanami, well, maybe that's true, that it's not included in the Arava. It has a different name. Says the Gemara, Arvi Nachal Amar Rachmana Mikol Makim. Keep in mind, Arvi is Lashon Rava. And it's coming to include this offshoot of the Arava, this Chilfa Gila, which is still considered part of the Arvi Nachal family, as opposed to Tzavtzafa, which is an entirely different species. So in conclusion, we had the word Arvi, Arvi Nachal, which is a Lashon Rav, which included many things. It includes the Arvi Nachal, which grew up on the mountains as well. According to Abishol, it was alluding to the two usages of Arava. It was used in the Lulav and used in the Migdash. How did Rabbanan know these two uses? The one in the Midrash is learned through a halacha Mishma Sinai. We learn from the Lashon Ravim that it's going to include the Chilfa Gila, which is also a type of Arvei Nachal. Amar Rav Chisda, Hanit Lasmili, the following three items, Ishtanu Shemayu, underwent a name change, Michichorav Beis HaMidrash, when the Midrash was destroyed. Number one, Chilfasa, that's another word for tzavtzafa, so this tzavtzafa type of arava, which is not roye for mitzvah, arvasa was renamed arava. On the other hand, arvasa, your typical arava, was renamed chilfasa, was now called tzavtzafa. So everything was switched around. Now the Mabit explains this was to mark the Avelis, the Agmas Nefesh, on account of the Churban HaMikdash, where they would use the Arava extensively. We mentioned earlier there was a special mitzvah to take the Arava and walk around the Mizbeach. So it's an expression of disappointment. They switched around the names to denote that nowadays we don't really have a full, complete fulfillment of the Arava mitzvah. So it was renamed Tzavtzaf. We don't really have the proper complete kiyum of the mitzvah of Arava. Now, Manav Kamina says, what's the point of mentioning this fact? Lulav. You walk into a store, you want an Arava for your lulav, you better know what it's called. So the Arava of yesteryear, which is kasha for lulav, is now referred to as tzavtzafa. So that's what you meant to ask for. You'll end up with a kasha Arava. The second item on the list, which underwent a name change after the Churban, was Shipura, that's the bent shofar, one from the ram. It was renamed Chatzitzrasa, which is a flat, long shofar. On the other hand, Chatzei Srasa, the long straight Shafer, was renamed Shipura. So everything was switched around. And once again, the Mamit explains, this was meant to mark our disappointment and a show of Avelis on the Churban, where the Shafer was used even on Shabbos, as opposed to nowadays, we don't really have a full and complete fulfillment of that mitzvah. So instead of calling it Shipura, we just call it Chatzei Srasa, to denote the downgrade and the incomplete fulfillment of the mitzvah associated with Sefer. Since we're in mind of Kamina, once again, what's the point here? L'Shefer Shosh Hashanah. If you want to know how to refer to the Rosh Hashanah Shefer, which is meant to be the round one, the bent one, nowadays, call it a Chatzei Srasa, and you'll end up with the Shefer of yesteryear. Third item on the list was Peserta. Peserta is a small mini table. So that was renamed Peserta, large table. Peserta, a large table, was renamed Peserta, a small table. And the point is that we missed the Shulchan. That wasn't the Beis HaMikdash, which had Lechem Apanim. So even our large banquet tables are merely referred to as small tables. We don't really have the big table, Hashem's table, which we would attend during the Beis HaMikdash time. So everything was renamed. Big was small, small became big. What's the point here? L'mekach memker. For transaction purposes, you walk into a furniture store. If you want a small table, then you better say peser. If you want a big one, peser. Amar Abaye af ani omer. I'll add another one to the list. Bekasi hovliva. In the stomach area of the animal, we have two sections. One called bekasi, beis hakoisos, which actually had two layers, two encasements, two coverings. It was a double covering, as opposed to Huvlila, which is called Hemasis in Lashon Kodesh, which only has one encasement, one layer of skin around. So the Beikasi was renamed Huvlila, and Huvlila was renamed Beikasi. Might have given it, what's the point of this? L'machat ha-nimtze bo'evi beis ha-koisis. If you find a pin embedded in the actual wall of the Beis HaKoisis. So, since the Beis HaKoisis has a double layer going around this cavity, if you find a needle embedded only in one of the layers, your behemoth is not yet a treifa. It's only a problem when it actually goes through both layers, and that is considered a serious internal wound, which makes it a treifa. And that's unique to Beis HaKoisis, which had a double enclosure, as opposed to the Huvlila, which was the Hemosis, only had a single covering. That's a big nafkimina on halacha. So nowadays, when they rename things, you have to be careful. If you find the machat in the Beikasi of today, it's a treifa. In the Huvlila of today, which is really the Beikasi of yesteryear, which has the double layer, then if it hadn't gone through both layers, you're kasha. Amar Rava Bar Yosef Avani Omer, I'll add another one to the list, another name change, which was Bavel turned into Bursiv, and Bursiv turned into Bavel. Minaf Kamina, what's the point here? Look at the Noshim. As far as the get procedure, Rashi explains, we learn in Maseches Gittin, if one actually brings a get from Chutz Laretz, he has to testify, he has to vouch for the authenticity of the get, that it was written with the intention to be used as a divorce document for this Isha. He has to testify regarding the authenticity of the signatures, and that was unique to Chutz Laretz. But when it came to a get delivered from Eretz Yisrael, or even from Bavel, where there were Bnei Yeshiva, these concerns didn't apply. They were learned people, etc. So you wouldn't have to say, Befonei Nechtam, it was written and signed before me. So this is unique to Eretz Yisrael, or to Bavel. So nowadays, if a get is delivered from Bavel, and it's called Bavel, you know it's not Bavel, it's Bursiv. In which case, the Bavel privilege doesn't apply, but if it's called Bursiv, you know it's coming from Bavel, and you're exempt from Befonei Nechtav, Befonei Nechtav. Says the Mishnah, okay, up until now we discussed the quality of the mitzvahs. What about the quantity? How much of each? Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Shloisha Hadasim, three Hadasim, Shtei Arabis, and two Arabis, Lulav Echad, Ve'esrog Echad, Lulav and Esrog, one each. Here comes the Chiddush, Afilu Shnaim Ketumim, going back to the three Hadasim, even if two of them have their tips clipped off, Ve'echad Einikotim, and merely only one is complete and whole, that's okay. The Gemara will go into the pshat of this shita. So that's Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, even a greater chiddush, afilu shloshtan ketumim, even if all three hadassim have their tips clipped off, that's okay. Rashi says, leibai hadar bahadas. There's no hadar requirement by a hadas. Some explain, because the pasuk says, ukachta lechem bayim rishon, preates hadar, kapes tumarim. So hadar refers to the esrog and applies itself to the lulav as well. Because bayim rishon preates hadar, that's the esrog. Kapes tumarim is written right after the word hadar. So the hadar relates back and forth to the pre-eights and to the kapes tumarim. The esrog and the lulav. When it comes to anafets, aves, and avir nachal, which are later on the pasuk, hadar doesn't apply to them. Other Rishonim explained that this is unique to Hadas because, remember, the leaves can rise above the stick as well. So even if the stick is chipped off on top, but the leaves sort of cover for it. In which case, it doesn't take away, it's not lacking in the beauty on the Hadar. So that's a Ritarfen. You need three Hadasim, two Arabis, but the three Hadasim need not be Hadar, they can be Ketumim. Rabbi Kiva, I mean, he disagrees. He says it's one each. Geshem Shalulav Echad. Ve'esrog echad, just as all agree, lulav and esrog is one apiece. Ka'chadas echad, v'ra achas. Likewise, by the hadas and arava, it's one apiece. Tanya Rabbi Shmuel Eimer, let's take a look at the pasuk, which will prove my point. Priyetz hadar, that's the esrog, echad, one. Kapis tmarim, so it's spelled kapas, lashon yochid. There again, echad, one lulav. When it comes to hadas, it's three. Anaf is one, eight is another one, avos is the third one. So we have Shloisha. Avir Nachal, it's again Lashon Rabim. Here we know two. So Avir Nachal is time. Getting back to the Hadas, says Rabbi Shmuel, they need not all be Hadar. Vafilu Shnaim Ketum, even if two of them's heads are clipped off, Vechashen Ekotim, and only one is whole, that's enough. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Shloisha, although you need three Hadasim, Vafilu Shloshtan Ketum, even if all three are missing their tips. Rabbi Kiva Omer, it's one apiece. Keshem shelulav echad ve'esrog echad, just like it's one of each. When it comes to lulav and esrog, we compare the other minim to lulav and esrog as well. Kach hadas echad v'arava echas. It's one each of hadas and arav. Omar, and some take out the word loy. Omar Rabbi Lezer, yachol yehi esrog imohen v'guda achas. He's going to make another point. Although you bind the lulav with the hadas and the arava, perhaps you'll do the same to the esrog. The esrog should be together with them, should join them all in one bundle. Amras, no. The response is as follows. Since when does the pasuk say, go ahead and take the pre-eitz hadar, v'kapes tmarim, which would indicate that it's meant to be joined together. So it's out of vav. It says, take the pre-eitz hadar, the esrog, and then it starts, kapes tmarim, indicating a separation. So, although you bind the lulav with the hadas and the arava, but the esrog is meant to say separate. Perhaps it's based on the well-known Gemara, the Medrash, where we find that every one of the four types, the lulav, the esrog, the hadas and the arava, represent different segments of Jews, different types of madregas. We have the Litz Tzadik, the Amaris, etc., and the esrog is the one that's the most valuable. It's edible, exudes a pleasant aroma. So it has Torah, it has mitzvahs, and although he's meant to join the other ones. In fact, there's a famous story with the Rikanti. He writes that he had a dream the first night of Sukkot where the Shem Hashem was separated in his dream. So the last hay was separated from the Yud Kei Vav, and he couldn't understand why. And then the next morning when he was shaking lulav, he realized that he would generally keep the esrog separate from the other minim, and each one represents a different letter of the Shem Havaya. So from then on he knew he has to join them together. But here we learn that it's not actually tied together. You join them together, but we don't tie them together. And perhaps the message is that the esrog, who stands higher, should look out to be mashpia and influence the others. So one who's be mashpia on others should make sure that although he's having influence on others, but he's not negatively affected or influenced by the others. So it should be sort of a one-way hashpah without getting anything negative in the return. So you put them together, but you don't actually bind them together. And that's what we learn from this pasuk. Umenayishem ma'akim zeh, continues the Brisa, how would we know that the four minim are ma'akim each other? You need all four of them. They're dependent upon each other. Tamalema lokachtem. Lokachtem is a combined word. V'lokach tam, whole, complete. Shedehe likicha tam, has to be a full and complete likicha. You need to have all four minim as one. It's all one mitzvah. Okay, so that's the price. Let's analyze Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel tells us, three hadasim, with two of them being clipped off. How does that work? Rabbi Shmuel manavshach, how do you explain it? Ish leimin boy, if he requires full and complete hadasim, li boy nami kulu, then all three of them need to be full, complete, and whole. Ili boy shleimin, if he doesn't need full and complete hadasim, tips off are fine. Afil chad nami loy, then you don't even need one to be full and intact. Rav Shmuel says, you take three, and two of them can have their tips cut off. How does that work? He says, the Gemara, you're right. Omar Biro'o, that was the name of a Chacham, Omar Rabami, Chazer by Rabbi Shmuel. In fact, Rabbi Shmuel was Chazer, and going forward, he sufficed with one Hadas, which was a full and complete Hadas, with its tip intact. Now, the Ritzva learns that the Gemara simply means that our perception in Rabbi Shmuel changed. He really meant initially that only one is really required. Min HaTorah, only one Hadas is required and needs to be Hadar. The extra two are only a Hidur Mitzvah Midrabanan for some reason. Now, there's a beautiful word from Rabbi Moshe Horowitz. He's brought in the back of the Gemaras. He says like this. Interesting thing. We find that the numbers, right, the question of whether three hadasim or one hadas, seems to be somewhat related to the concept of hadar as well, right? Rabbi Akiva says it needs to be one hadas and needs to be complete hadar, just like the esrog. Whereas Rabbi Tarfon, right, he certainly holds that three clipped off are fine. It was never a question. He says clearly, afilu shloshtan ketumen. So it's three. Right, it's different than the hadas, it's three. And there's no hadar requirement. So he says, a beautiful part, he says, the two things are very much related. Look, think about it. The reason why Rabbi Akiva says it's one each, that's because we compare everything to each other. We compare the hadas and arava to the lulav esrog. So once he's comparing, he's connecting the hadas to the esrog, in terms of quantity, it's one each. Likewise, in terms of quality, that hadar applies to all minim equally. So it's one and hadar, one and complete. Whereas Rabbi Tarfon, who says three hadasim, apparently, he's not learning from esrog, which is just one. He holds it's unrelated, unconnected, it's disconnected from esrog. And therefore, it's a different number. It goes by three instead of one. If so, there's no din of hadar. So it's all one and the same concept. If you learn from esrog, so it's the same number and the same quality. If it's not learned from esrog, then you end up with a different number and a different quality as well. Okay, so in short, we had a question regarding the quantity of the hadas and the arava. We have two shittas. We have Rabbi Tarfon. Hadas is three without a hadar requirement. Arava is two. Now, how do we know hadas is three? Anaf is one, eitz is two, and avos is the third. And he doesn't learn from esrog, therefore it's a different number and different quality. Whereas Rabbi Akiva seems to learn from the esrog. Therefore he says, the hadas and arava are one each, and the hadas and arava need an hadar. So both things go together. It's one just like the esrog, and it's hadar just like the esrog. Continues the Gemara, Omar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. What's the halacha? Three hadasim, one hadas, halacha Rabbi Tarfon? That you can have, you need three, but they can be clipped off. You don't need hadar. In fact, Shmuel is in line with a statement that he stated elsewhere. Amalu Shmuel, lahanu demazbini asa. Shmuel warned these asa dealers, these hadasim vendors, who were overcharging because of a great demand, because people were seeking perfect hadasim with their tips intact. He says, look, if you're going to overcharge, I'm going to interfere. Ashru, even out, meaning lower your prices to fair value, uzvinu, and sell in that manner. So lower your prices, viloy, but otherwise, the rishna lechuk Rabbi Tarfon. I'm going to go out and publicize Rabbi Tarfon's shita. You don't need complete hadasim. Clipped off hadasim are perfectly fine, in which case demand will drop and you'll no longer be able to charge the way you're doing. So that's from my time. Why would he refer to Rav Tarfon over Rabbi Akiva? Remember, Rabbi Akiva holds that all you need is one hadas to begin with. So why Rav Tarfon? My time, Ilay Mishum de Mekel, because Rav Tarfon is lenient, and that would be used as a good threat against the vendors. For Lidrish Luk Rabbi Akiva. What about Rabbi Akiva? The Mekel Tfei was even more Mekel. Rabbi Akiva requires only one to begin with. So wouldn't that have been a better threat? Says the Gemara, Tlosa Ketumi Shchichi. Rabbi Tarfon is actually a more effective threat because three clipped off hadasim are commonly found, whereas Chad v'Lekotim L'Shchich, one hadas intact, is not as commonly found as three clipped off. And therefore, he preferred referring to Rabbi Tarfon, who allows clipped off hadasim, and use that as a threat against the vendors. Now, here he asks a kasha. He says, what's the Gemara's kasha? Why did he choose Rabbi Tarfon? He could have gone to Rabbi Akiva. He didn't know the Rabbi Akiva. How do you know that? How do you know that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Akiva? In fact, we just learned. Amar Bidamar Shmuel, lock up Rabbi Tarfon. You need three clipped up, but three. So what do you mean he should have gone to Rabbi Akiva? Says Tosis, no, that's what the Gemara is trying to prove. You see, we had a halacha Rabbi Tarfon. That's number one. Then the Gemara says, I'll prove it. I have a raya, in fact, from the story, from the threat. And he holds like Rabbi Tarfon. And the Gemara continues, well, maybe he was just trying to threaten them, but he didn't really hold the Rabbi Tarfon. Well, if that's the case, if he was just looking for an effective threat, he should have chosen Rabbi Akiva, which is a more severe threat, right? Apparently, it's because he held like Rabbi Tarfon. And that proves that in fact Shmuel Paskins like Rabbi Tarfon. It wasn't just a bluff. He really held like Rabbi Tarfon. Otherwise, he should have gone to Rabbi Akiva. And the one response to that, no, you can't prove anything because actually Rabbi Tarfon is a more effective threat than Rabbi Akiva. Right? As the Gemara says, because that's more common. So the bottom line is we don't really have a riot. We're looking for a proof to back up that in fact Shmuel Paskins like Rabbi Tarfon. And the conclusion is that it's not really conclusive because perhaps he merely referred to Rabbi Tarfon in a threatening context, but didn't really hold like Rabbi Tarfon the halacha. And Taisa says that you can do this, even though it's sort of an untruth here, but it was in order to enable the mitzvah, so that the mitzvah should be mitzuya and available, and it should be accessible, and Yisrael will be able to mekayim the mitzvah. So it was a heter. In that case. So let's go on to Esrig. Says the Mishnah, Esrig ha-gozel ba-yavish posel. Once again, stolen, dried up is posel. Shal ha-shera, Mishal ha-radach is posel. Abedazor is unsuitable. Shal orla, oh. If it's in the first 3 years of the fruit tree, it's posel, which the Gemara will explain. Shal truma tmei posel, which the Gemara will explain. What about shal truma tohira? Lo yitil, l'chadchila, you shouldn't use it. If not al kasher, but the evidence works, once again, the Gemara will explain. What about shel demai? Something purchased from Nam Aretz, where there's a suffix as to its truma or master status. Beishamay poislin, or beisil machshin. What about shel master sheni b'Yerushalayim? You have an esrig, which is actually master sheni, but you're in Yerushalayim, as Rashi explains, you have a heter to eat it here, because otherwise, there's no hava amina, that it's kosher for esrig use, because lachem, Lokachlam lachem indicates that it has to be something that you can't consume. But if it's in Yerushalayim, when you have that ability to eat the maser, now we have a shayla. Lo yita, lechatchili, shouldn't use it. Vim not al kasher, but the evidence works. The Gemara will explain. Also, chazazes al rubay. Chazazes is some sort of blister, some sort of skin condition, which surfaces over most of the esrig. That's possible. Nitla pitmasa, if it's pitam, if it's the upper protrusion was removed. Niklav, if the skin was peeled off. Nistak, the esrog was split. Nikav v'chasa kolshu. it got punctured, and it's actually missing some of its flesh. Pasul, in all these cases, it's pasul. And the Rishonim explained that niklav is different than chasur. The chasur is the same thing, missing flesh, and it's peeled off. Why does the Mishnah list it as two? The answer is niklav is referring to the outer skin, right? Not the white, which is the actual flesh of the esrog, right? There's a green outer skin. There's actually two parts to that skin. There's a more transparent, a glazed layer on the outside, and then you have the actual green layer, and then you have the white layer. So chaser kosher is referring to the actual flesh, the white flesh of the esrog, whereas niklav is referring to the outer skin. And some Rishonim learn, as long as it's just the green portion, then that's not called chaser. Why then is niklav pasul? We're speaking that the entire esrog was peeled off. And that's a new psul of niklav. It's missing its skin. Says Mishnah, also chazazes al mi'utay. Suppose the chazazes, this blistering condition, surfaced on only a minor portion of the esrog. Nitel uksa, it's missing its stem. Nikav lechaser kolshu, got punctured, but it's not really missing anything from the actual substance. Rashi says, suppose it was punctured using a machat, a needle. In which case, all that got lost is some moisture, some juice, but it's not actually missing any of the material itself. In all these cases, it's kush. Esrog kushi, what about a black esrog? Rashi says it comes from Eretz Kush, where it's or it grows black, pasul. That's considered an esrog pasul. What about vayor kekarsi? It's perfectly green, like a leek. Rav Meir machshir, Rabbi the pasul. I explained earlier in the Gemara, it's because it's as yet unripe. We don't have Gemara pri, and the Torah requires a pri. Pri eitz hotter. So that's the tam of Rabbi Yudah. What about size? Shir esrog hakat. What's the smallest esrog you can take? Rameya meke egois, like a walnut. Rameya meke beitz. It has to have an egg equivalent. And once again, the Gemara explained, it's based on Gemara Pera. It has to develop properly. It has to arrive at least at the kebetza size. Ube gadol, what's the biggest esrog you can use? Kadei sheyoychaz shnayim biyadei. As long as you can hold two of them in one hand. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara earlier once again explained it's for practical reasons, because since you meant to hold the lulav in the right, esrog in the left, and perhaps he grabbed it the wrong way and he has to switch it, so he has to allow for maneuvering, and therefore don't have it too big so that he can actually maneuver it without dropping it. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi Omer, I'm not concerned about that. Afilu echad b'shteyada, even you have a huge jumbo esrog, Moroccan esrog, so you have one esrog that has to be handled with two hands, that's also kosher for use. Okay, let's review the main points that we learned today. We began with arava, we ended with esrog. The pasuk says, arvi nachal. The Gemara learns, it's a min, it's a variety, it's a species, a type of arava which generally grows alongside the nachal, the streams. And of course, if you actually happen to find it on the mountains, it's still kosher. What is your siman for a kosher arava? Red stem, long oval drawn out leaf, and smooth edges. Even chilfa gilu, which has somewhat of a serrated edge, that's also considered part of the arava nachal family and it's kosher. As opposed to tzaftzafa, which is a type of arava which is generally found among the mountains, has a white stem, a rounder sleeve, and serrated edges. That's not included in the arava nachal. It's an inferior type, as we find in the Tochach of Yecheskel. Higher standards have been downgraded from arava to tzaftzafa. Arve Nachal is Lashon Rab. It's going to include even the Arve Nachal, which happened to be growing elsewhere. It's referring to the Arava with a lulav, the Arava in the Beis HaMikdash. It's including the Chilfa Gila, which is a different type of category of Arve Nachal. And as we learned later on, at least according to some Shittis, it's coming to teach you that Arve Nachal requires two. You have to take two Aravis. Now, regarding the amount of Adasim Arabis, the Gemara's conclusion was that we actually have two Shittas. Rabbi Tarfon requires three Adasim and two Arabis. Anaf and Eitz and Avais are three. You don't need Hadar, we don't learn from the Esrog. Rabbi Kiva says one of each. Lulav, Esrog, Hadasim, and Arabis. And we compare all the meaning one to the other. And therefore, Hadar indeed is a requirement amongst all the minim. We concluded with the story of Shmuel, who took interest in what was going on in the marketplace. He wanted to make it easier to purchase the Dalad Minim. And we ended with the Mishnah describing the halachas of the Esrig. Hatzlacha rabbi to you, and kol tov.